limb knife.
Mm-hmm.
Howdy. This is Linoleum Knife.
A podcast of the cinema.
Yes. I'll tell me.
You do you.
You tell you.
I'm Alonzo Duraldi, film critic for TheRap.com and What the Flick on YouTube.
I'm Candyface.
We're still going with that, are we?
I still like it. I still like that's my new name.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I'm the master of my own life.
Uh-huh.
All of it.
Why don't you tell people your professional name?
I'll name myself.
So they can know how to find you.
Dave White. And you know what? Here's why I should instead be known as Candyface. Mm-hmm. Because Dave White could be anybody, as I have learned this week. Not only is there an actor, yet another actor,
yes,
named with my name,
mm-hmm,
David A.R. White.
Because I'm sure there was probably already a David A. White and a David R. White.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with the David White.
Who is Larry Tate on Bewitched.
Who portrayed Larry Tate on Bewitched.
Who is also in Sweet Smell of Success.
Correct. This is a different David White,
mm-hmm,
whose biggest mainstream claim to fame was as a recurring character on Evening Shade.
Ah.
Back in the day.
Well, now he's appearing in the hit film.
Now he does faith-based films.
Yes.
Almost exclusively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he is in the surprise breakout indie hit of the weekend, God's Not Dead.
Yes.
Which we will be talking about. Yes. Well, I will be talking about it.
I was spared.
I saw it. You did not.
No. Although, and first I want to tell everybody...
Also, what?
About how you tried to poison me this weekend.
Hang on. I'm still talking about me and my name.
How it's a miracle that I'm alive.
Also, Hermes, the luxury leather goods manufacturer.
Right.
Historically, you know... Everyone, everyone doesn't know what they are because Bibbs had to ask me what they were.
It's where Catherine Tremel gets her scarves in Basic Instinct.
They've been around for like a couple hundred years, I think now, or maybe less than that. But you know, they're based in Paris, and they began as sort of like equestrian stuff, and they still make things for horse riding. Yeah.
You can still get an Hermes saddle,
but
everything will cost you at Hermes.
They make luxury items, lady clothes, man clothes. You have an Hermes necktie
and a mug,
and a mug, and they, they make. They make fancy things.
Yes.
And anyway, they called me this week and asked me if I was the Dave. This is how I knew they were
barking up the wrong tree.
David White.
Yeah.
They asked for David White. And they said, "Are you the David White that's married to Erica White?" And I said, "Depends. Did she get me something nice?" And the lady laughed, and I said, "No, that is not me."
We went to a birthday party this weekend, and Dave introduced himself, and somebody said, "Yeah, I went to high school with a David White," and to which he responded, "Yeah, everybody did."
So did I.
Yeah, you had another David White.
There was another David White in my class. It's been a week of David because of that phone call, uh-huh, and because of this actor, and because of this birthday party last night. Was the 50th birthday party of a friend of mine from high school.
Right.
A woman I went to high school with. When I was in high school, it became like this transitional moment in my life where my family and all my early friends were calling me David. And then suddenly, not because of me, people started calling me Dave.
Mm.
But anyway, the friend of mine whose birthday it was, she to this day calls me David.
Yes.
And I, you know, I don't care.
See, people calling...
I don't care.
People calling you David is like my relatives calling me Alonso. It's just a thing.
Oh, but see, here's the thing, though. When you go home, you refer to yourself as Alonso.
Well, because to not do so would be ridiculous.
Right. But I've never pronounced your name that way.
No, nor should you.
Yeah. So, why is this important? What are we talking about?
You went off on the Dave White tangent.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so anyway, I'm Dave White. I'm the film critic for Movies.com.
Yes. And you tried to poison me this weekend.
I did. But I did it. I did so without trying. The trying is the operative word here.
Okay, sorry. You poisoned me with benign neglect this weekend.
I like to think of it as poisoning you effortlessly. I don't have to try.
So I get up on Saturday morning, and you know, usually my breakfast routine is I pour myself a bowl of cereal and we're done. But we were out of cereal.
What does this have to do with the current cinema?
We're good, because people need to know. The public has a right to know how you poisoned me. So, you know, I think, okay, well, you know, it's Saturday. I got the time. I'll get a little ambitious on breakfast. So I make myself an omelet, and, you know, the eggs are happening, and I look on the counter, and there's the last third or so of this loaf of whole wheat bread that you bought at the farmer's market this week. It was really good. I was like, oh, great, and there's a little butter left so I can pop in the toaster, and great, great, great. So I do it all up, and it's all delicious and whatever.
It's a French dude who goes to the farmer's market with all his breads.
Right.
Calls me boss when I walk up to the booth.
And his breads, part of what makes them so great, is apparently not all that many preservatives in them.
None. And they go bad after like 4 days. So you've got to really be committed to bread.
Yeah.
And in this house,
This was bread you purchased on Monday, and I'm eating this on Saturday, and everything seems hunky-dory. It's not until I'm doing the dishes that I notice these crusts floating in the sink, and I'm like, what are you, big baby? You have to cut your crusts off your bread? And
and
Dave goes, oh no, there was mold on it. I said, really? There was mold on the bread that you watched me put in the toaster and butter and eat, and you never said anything about it?
I wasn't thinking. I just wasn't thinking.
Killer. Killer, 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 killer.
You're not going to die.
No, I'm just going to have extra antibiotics, apparently.
Yes.
Ugh.
You're going to have some penicillin growing inside of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's going to be great. You're going to be immune to a lot of things.
Yeah. Well, I need to be immune to cool guys like you in my life who can't bother to tell me, oh, by the way, don't eat the moldy part of the bread.
You act like I planned this.
No, you just sat there and watched it happen and never crossed your mind. You didn't even bother to think, oh, perhaps I should tell him moldy bread.
I was thinking about a lot of really important things, and I couldn't concern myself with your little domestic situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're the worst.
I had important thoughts happening in my mind.
Yeah. That's my summation of this whole thing. You're the worst.
I have important thoughts happening in my mind.
Look, you can't juggle more than
when
one
was
at
this,
a time.
Was this yesterday?
You have important thoughts at best.
Was this yesterday?
It was yesterday.
Well, I had important thoughts about going to the mall to see God's Not Dead.
Yeah, God's Not Dead, but your husband is because he ate moldy bread.
Are you dead? No.
Not yet.
No.
I'm a ticking time bomb.
Should we perhaps discuss the current cinema now?
Let's discuss the
current
cinema.
Now that you're done.
Fine.
Airing our dirty laundry.
The truth will out.
The truth will actually bore a lot of people. Is really what the truth is going to be.
There are as many people who tune in for this kind of stuff as they do for what they're
current
cinema.
I think that our close friends, when they tune in, they are like, oh, I love it when they argue about stuff that's just not about movies at all. I love it when they just talk about the dishes or the tea or the moldy bread or whatever.
I think this is one of the reasons
that people turn the show off. After 3 minutes ago, I thought this was a movie podcast.
I want this show to be all things to all people. Mm-hmm. All right, fine. The current cinema. The big release this weekend, of course, is Divergent.
Before this film began, I was sitting next to Bibbs
mm-hmm.
at the Grove. And he said, what's the porn parody version? Because pornography is never far from Bibbs's mind.
No, no, it's not.
He is, what's the word?
He's a satellite of that world.
He's a pornography archivist. Let's legitimize him in this pursuit.
Now, I used to date somebody who was really a pornography artist, so that bar has been raised. I will say that he is an enthusiast.
An enthusiast.
And pundit.
Yeah, I mean, because he does cover it professionally as a writer. And like, it's a world that he...
They just did a special episode of the B-Movies podcast with an adult film actress. When I did his Christmas movie videos, there were adult film actresses. So he is, you know, he knows that world.
He swirls around in that world.
I suppose so.
That liquidy world.
He is the ice cube floating in that cocktail.
That is, yeah. And he said, so what's the porn parody name of Divergent? And so we sat there and we were just talking and we came up with Bi-Virgins.
I was going to say Virgin had to be in there somewhere,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Okay. But Bi-Ones.
Bi-Virgins. Classy.
We need to come up with a plot.
See, I never... Here's what I don't figure out. The porn people knew a year ago that this movie was coming out.
And I know, they really are. I think they're asleep at the wheel.
Why is it Bi-Virgins on the shelf right now?
I know.
But we brought this up when Pacific Rim came out last year. It's like, wake up, people.
I think they're doing is they're waiting to find out what sticks.
As it were.
Because if no one cares about Divergent...
Right, then they've wasted their...
Why would anyone care about Bi-Virgins?
True. Fair enough.
I think I'm right about that.
You may be right.
I think they, much like SNL, they're looking to see what makes the news.
Right.
And then they do their commentary.
They respond accordingly.
They respond with wieners and chochas.
Right. Chachis, as they're called on,
Hoo-has,
as they say on Girls. Divergent. It's another YA movie.
Yes, it is.
Which means it's about the specialest girl in the world.
Yes, it is.
Do you want me to explain?
Talk about it.
Shailene Woodley plays Beatrice.
Yes.
Owner of many food corporations. No. She lives in post-apocalyptic Chicago that's been fenced in and... society has been divided up into five factions. Let me see if I can still remember these. There's Erudite, which is the smarty pants.
Erudite.
There's Candor, which is they tell the truth. I guess they're lawyers, basically. Mm-hmm. There's Amity, who are the farmers.
Yes.
There's Abnegation, who are the social workers and charitable people.
Yes.
And then there's Dauntless, who are the cops and military.
And those are the five.
Yeah.
Two adjectives, three nouns.
Nouns, I know, yeah. So get it together,
annoyingly,
future society.
Annoyingly non-parallel.
Yes.
And I, the minute this came up in the film, I thought, the powers that be couldn't even come up with five of the same parts of speech.
Couldn't they all be adverbs or something?
Couldn't they all, yeah.
Like, gerunds,
couldn't
anything?
They all be adjectives? Couldn't they all be nouns? Like... Who's running the show here?
Well, it's a woman named Veronica Roth, who wrote the exceedingly popular book on which this movie is based, and two more of them, which means we're being threatened with at least three more movies.
I found it bothersome.
Yeah, so there's that. And I found it bothersome that, okay, so that then who's taking out the trash, and who designs all these color-coded uniforms that everybody's wearing?
Is that in the book?
Apparently not. Or maybe, I think somebody...
They don't talk about who does all that stuff in the
Somebody
book?
Said that in the book that the people who are factionless... sort of fill in the gap with that.
No. You know what? The people, according to the
film... In the film, the people who are factionalists don't do anything.
They sit around open fires in the street, and they eat dirt, and they don't bathe.
Exactly.
And that is what they do. And everyone else, like Amity, they are shown to be, one, laughing and happy, and crop gatherers.
Yeah.
Like, they do all the migrant labor.
They constantly live in, like, a commercial for organic vegetables.
Yeah.
Like, it's... Because it's, you know, it's a hands-on farm, and everybody's grinning like mad. And
singing.
Wearing orange.
Happy. And, yeah. Mm-hmm. Candor.
Yes. The Bottle City.
I don't know what they do. What does Candor do?
Lawyer was the best I could figure out.
Sit around and be... they're, you know, sarcastic.
Yeah, they tell the truth all the time. Like, so they're bitchy? What are we talking about here? I guess they're lawyers. I don't know.
And then erudite, they're the smarties.
But, like, they're the smarties of everything. Everything from sort of science to philosophy to whatever. It's all, you know.
So it's conceivable that erudite, they design all the things, probably.
Yeah.
And they set up the plans for things. But then who does those things? Like, who runs the train? Who builds the train? Who?
Yeah. Who, well, the train, I think, was left over. It's the old L, you know.
Who? Yeah, but they have to have new ones, you know. Who builds the housing? Who makes the cars? And who makes the clothes and stuff like that?
So I'm baffled.
So then Dauntless, they've got black leather outfits.
Yes, and they
and asymmetrical haircuts.
They run around whooping it up like the parkour cast of Godspell.
They're really into yelling.
Yeah, like and climbing things.
Like they in their main social area, that was so loud, and everyone's just shouting.
Right.
I turned. Gary Cotti was on my right.
Uh-huh.
Bibbs on my left. Gary Cotti on the right. And I turned to Gary Cotti and I said, "They're yelling so much. I just would like. I don't want to be in Dauntless. I want to go where it's quiet. Can I just go somewhere where people aren't yelling?"
Well, I figured out later the only reason for all that whooping is that so that later when they are not whooping, we're supposed to notice the difference, basically.
They're highly spirited.
They're, yes, highly strong.
But then later, when Kate Winslet turns them into... Wait, am I supposed to talk about this?
I don't know.
Can we talk about this?
I don't know. I assume that people who care already read the book, and if you don't care, you don't care if we talk about what happens.
After Kate Winslet turns them into zombies.
Yes.
And manipulates them with, like, do my bidding juice.
Yes.
Like, they inject them with a thing that makes them obey and not talk, and
zombie
suddenly Dauntless becomes just frowny faced gun
army of doom
toters. Yeah. Anyway,
so okay,
Beatrice turns 16 and she has to take her aptitude test.
Yeah, she has to go into the choosing ceremony,
where you learn if you're an INFP or an ENFJ. whatever any of those letters mean.
I've never done that test. Haven't figured out. So, yeah, apparently it turns out in her test that she... Usually it tells you which one of the five factions you should join, although you can join whichever one you want.
Yes.
She, assuming that she's going to be abnegation, just like her parents, Tony Goldwyn and Ashley Judd...
Abnegation are the nice, the selfless people.
They're the social
workers. And they wear gray... Mm-hmm. Smocks.
Yes. But and the test reveals that she is
a variety of gray shades.
Yes.
So that, you know, there's a bit of stylishness.
It's kind of like the Ann Taylor catalog.
Yeah.
She takes the test and finds out she is dun dun dun.
You're thinking Eileen Fisher, not Ann Taylor.
Okay, fine. Do I get to?
You need to get it right.
Okay.
Textile wise, this needs to come correct.
You have stepped on my joke twice now, so I'm not even going to make it.
It deserves.
She
to
finds
be it. On.
No, you deserve. Your face deserves to be stepped on. Poisoner. She finds out that she is divergent, which is a big effing deal in this world, because apparently it means that you're bi-curious or whatever.
She is.
She could be abnegation. She could be dauntless, or she could be erudite. Right?
Yeah, she's all. She's the best of everything.
Yes, yay her. Her test taker person, Maggie Q, basically tells her to, like, run home, pretend like you got sick, and this never happened.
Yes.
So then, at the next day, at the choosing ceremony, which is very Harry Potter sorting hat, Gryffindor!
And takes forever.
Yeah, well, they got
like a thousand kids
every
there.
16-year-old has and to, like, cut their hand like, with take the same the gross
slow
knife.
March down the... down the ramp, and then you have to cut your hand, and they all cut their hand with the same...
I know, that's not very...
Blade, this is not sanitary, and...
So she joins...
Everyone's going to get hepatitis before they choose their faction.
So she joins Dauntless, and her brother joins Erudite, much to the chagrin of Tony Goldwyn and Ashley Judd. And so then, of course, it's one thing to choose to be in Dauntless, but then you have to earn your way in, and...
Yeah, it's the only one where you can join it, and then you have to...
Well, we don't know.
Prove yourself.
We don't know. They could have the SATs over at Erudite. I mean, But basically, maybe. If you don't get into your faction, then you are factionless, and then you are eating dirt and sitting by barrel fires. So it's very kind of rocky
training. You don't even get a second chance. No. And you can't even go home.
Yeah, there's no do-over. Like, you can't go back to your parents' house. Yeah. So it's a big deal.
It's not fun in the future.
No. Time for the Rocky training montage. Here's the thing that really annoyed me about this movie. Like, she's in this class of about, like, 30 incoming freshmen to Dauntless, right? Yes. And then, of course, obviously, they narrow it down to, like, a close group of people around her, some friends, some enemies. There are two girls. One is sort of, like, thick and tough, and one is Zoe Kravitz.
Yes.
And then there's anywhere from 3 to 5 guys, because they all look alike, except that one happens to be Miles Teller, but they're all like these brunette dudes who look identical.
Yeah.
So then later when one of them betrays her, I'm sort of like, wait, which one was that? Were you friends? I don't even know. Ugh. And then, Jai Courtney, who we think is an interesting up-and-comer, but gets stuck in a lot of daggy movies. Like,
he's going to be an action star.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen.
If he could just stop getting cast in things like Die Hard 5 or...
Right. He's paying his dues.
He was in Jack Reacher.
He's Australian, and he's...
He's on one of those Spartacus shows.
He's Australian. He's super handsome. He's a side of beef, and he's going to...
Got one of those broken nosy kind of faces.
He's going to be a big deal.
Yeah, but anyway, in this movie, they kind of put these stupid, like, eyebrow piercings and tattoos on him. He looks dopey, but...
Yeah.
He's the mean trainer, and the nicer trainer is this guy, Four, who, of course, falls in love with Beatrice, who now goes by Triss.
Uh-huh.
Triss.
Because that's a tough word. Beatrice is a soft maternal name.
Right.
Triss is her aspirational tough girl name.
Triss is also a flame retardant chemical that was added to children's pajamas in the 1970s until they figured out it was giving people cancer. Do you remember that?
Yes. I do now.
So that name makes her extra tough. I didn't
think about it until just now.
I just thought of it just now, too. You know where this is going.
Yeah, it follows Hunger Games.
Boom!
Really, really closely in terms of like how the young girl, you know, becomes the person that she's meant to be, and there's going to be a rebellion later, and she has to fight the bad people. What's going to be interesting, I hope, about this is Shailene Woodley. If this thing sinks or falls, or let me say it differently.
It does both.
If it
rises or
falls. If it moves forward, she will be the one carrying it. Because she carries this whole movie. She alone. And unfortunately,
I didn't find her all that interesting.
She is, well, I think that she brings with her a kind of softness that Jennifer Lawrence does not. The minute we met Jennifer Lawrence in Winter's Bone, she was already tough.
Yeah.
She was not taking anybody's garbage.
Right.
But
that's appropriate for Katniss, though.
It is, and then it becomes appropriate for Katniss as well. This character, even though she follows the same path as Katniss, she is not prepared at the beginning. Like, the first time you see Katniss in the film, I don't know these books at all.
Right, she's like hunting a squirrel or whatever.
I'm not going to read them. I'm not going to go near them. Period.
No, me neither.
But the first time you see Katniss in Hunger Games, she's got that bow and arrow and she's killing some animals.
Yes.
She's taking care of business for her family.
Right.
Beatrice is just kind of hanging out. Like, she's just a girl. She's abnegation girl, so she's been raised to be kind and soft and gentle and
selfless.
Selfless.
Yeah.
So one of the challenges that when she gets into Dauntless is she's got to get rid of all that softness. And the film takes a very long time getting her there. And there's actually tension in the story because you worry for her. You think, girl, don't jump over that giant chasm. You're going to fall. Or you are going to get kicked out of Dauntless because you're kind of a weakling. I mean, he even says to her, the trainer guy, the four is his name,
yeah,
who she's falling in love with. He's like, you're weak. And the audience is thinking, well, we all knew that like 30 minutes ago.
I agree with you on paper that all that stuff is interesting, and I have liked Shailene Woodley a lot in Spectacular Now and in The Descendants. I thought she was kind of a snooze here. I didn't really
get into
her the way that I did.
She's the most relatable and real of the special girls in these YA film adaptations. And what I did really like was when she finally got her strength, when she finally got her power.
Uh-huh.
Everyone still thinks that she's a softie. And so when she's got like the gun, the guy goes, you're not really going to kill me. And this becomes like the second or third time that someone tells her, eh, you're not going to do anything to me. I love her response. This is sort of like the cheering moment for her in the film, where she's like, why does everybody keep saying that?
Well, because like, yay! Because she's from Abnegation.
Boom, blow you away now gonna be, with you the know, big Shailene Woodley kind weaponry. Of I did not hate this. It's not good. It's just not horrible. It's a copycat film that dared to take 2.5 hours to get you from, you know, soft and fuzzy to now I'm a badass.
I just didn't care, and it all felt familiar, and I'm dreading having to go back to more of these.
It is not, again, a good film.
You know,
it is, however, not Misery.
I'm not going to get my Beautiful Creatures franchise.
No, you're not.
I'm not going to get my His Dark Materials franchise.
No, you're not.
But I'm getting this.
You are.
As long as I don't have to do any more City of Bones.
I would like if young women, now that we've, you know, seen that Hollywood will make films where young women are not just the protagonist and not just, you know, action stars,
mm-hmm,
but not at all defined by their relationships to men. That's good. That's a step in the right direction. I would just like these films not to all be exactly the same. And unfortunately, the formula dictates that they're going to be very much like
granted,
the same.
I would rather copies of Hunger Games than copies of Twilight.
Yes.
But that's cold comfort.
Yeah, I know. I know. There should be more. They should be smarter, weirder, wilder, more thoughtful, willing to stray in some new direction.
Right.
And that's, so far, not what we have here.
No. Well, we'll see. Linoleum Knife is brought to you by...
You thought you were going to get out of this podcast with no commercial interruption, didn't you? But you're wrong. You are getting commercially interrupted. And by not the sponsor you think that you're getting commercially interrupted by.
What?
Guess what?
As
sponsor number two.
As John Charles Daly used to say on What's My Line, and now a word from our alternate sponsor.
That's right. We got another sponsor. This is pretty exciting.
Yeah.
I must say, for a nothing little podcast like we are,
mm-hmm,
with 10 listeners.
Don't say that. No one else will sponsor us.
Thousands
of listeners.
Potential other sponsors. I regret to inform you that we have 10 listeners.
Stop.
It's true.
It's not true. And I don't just say that because people are paying us things now. We actually have it's an ever-growing audience.
People paid us money under false pretenses.
No, they didn't.
So that we could promote their products.
The pretenses were true. Now,
we didn't lie to anybody.
No.
We told them straight up, look, basically, we're nobody. And we have 10 listeners. But people are sponsoring us anyway.
But they're taking a chance on us and on our listeners. So hopefully our listeners will respond to them.
Alonzo Duraldi of therap.com.
Yes, Dave White of movies.com.
Who is Linoleum Knife? Who sponsors Linoleum Knife?
Linoleum Knife is brought to you by No Budget Film School.
No Budget Film School. They're a real thing.
Yes.
No Budget Film School is located where? Here in Los Angeles, right?
You have the copy in front of you. I don't know.
I do.
Nope. Yes. Oh, sorry. Let me. Yes, and you.
No Budget.
Yes, no in budget. Los Angeles.
No Budget Film School presents its famed. Did you know it was famed?
I believe I did.
I did not. But it's got to be famed because of all the people who've been involved in it in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I will give you their names in just a minute. No Budget Film School presents its famed Art and Science of No Budget Filmmaking class on May 3rd and 4th in Los Angeles. Are you a filmmaker? Do you want to make a film? Are you broke? Like Linoleum Knife. Then you need the No Budget Film School, because not only do you have no budget to make your movie, maybe you don't even have a camera. You're going to have to go steal a camera from somebody. Somebody rich. Don't steal from someone poor.
I don't think that's what the kind of thing they suggest you do.
Steal the camera from someone rich.
No.
Then go to No Budget Film School.
We are not advocating any kind of misdemeanors or crimes.
It's punk rock to steal.
Stop it.
Anyway, No Budget Film School presents its famed Art and Science of No Budget Filmmaking class on May 3rd and 4th in Los Angeles. Veteran indie producer and No Budget Film School founder Mark Stolaroff teaches the specific methods, models, and priorities of successful no-budget filmmaking in this unique, one-of-a-kind class. If you are ready to make a movie, and you have stolen your camera, if you're tired of chasing money, tired of asking for permission to make your movie, then this will be the most practical filmmaking class you will ever take. Stolaroff will teach you how to make a film with whatever resources you have available right now, including your stolen camera.
Stop with the stolen camera.
These cutting-edge techniques cannot be found in a book. Uh-oh, wait.
No, I cleared that with him. Carry on.
Wait a second.
No, it's fine.
These cutting-edge techniques cannot be found in a book, at a film school, or in other film classes. So if you're in film school right now, you're a sucker. Drop out. Steal a camera. Go to the No Budget Film School class on May 3rd and 4th in Los Angeles.
Where in Los Angeles?
Hang on, I'm getting to that part.
All right. Taking as long as Divergent at this point.
Stolaroff will be joined by several guest speakers, including distribution expert Peter Broderick.
Oh, wow, I know him.
And post-production person Matt Radecki, or Radecki, of the Indie Post House, Different by Design.
Okay.
Several other guests will be announced soon, but past guest speakers, and here's where you know that these people are legit and are not fakers or liars or people who would encourage you to steal a camera. They would not ask you to do any of these things.
No.
They are not me.
No.
It's why I will not be a speaker and have not been a guest speaker.
No one's inviting you to, yes.
But past guest speakers have included Joe Carnahan.
Okay.
David Gordon Green.
Whoa.
Jody Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Ty West.
Great.
Jay Duplass.
Nice.
Sean Baker.
Okay.
Drake Doremus.
Okay.
Destin Cretton. I don't know who that is.
He did. Do I know who Destin? Short Term 12.
Oh, okay. He's great. That dude.
Yeah.
And Alex Karpovsky.
Wow. Okay.
And many others.
Alex Karpovsky, who I chatted up at the Spirit Awards.
Yes.
Because Matt Seitz had raved about his movies.
Alex Karpovsky, who keeps following me around town.
Yes. And he said that this program turned up in his Google feed because we mentioned him, and that he said he would listen. I don't know if he ever did, but I'm not going to hold him to it.
That dude is on my trail. Everywhere I go, I see him. He's just standing there, lurking.
Yeah. You guys have similar
driving tastes, obviously. Driving past me, crossing in an intersection, standing around at the LA Art Book Fair, I'm like, what are you doing here, dude?
He's haunting
you. This is my place.
I'm going to sit down to this podcast one day, and it's going to be Alex Karpowski.
He's just going to be, you know what? He's just going to materialize. He's going to come out of the hallway. Alex Karpowski, what are you doing in our house? Making the bread go moldy, probably. How do you know it wasn't him? How do you know it wasn't Alex Karpowski?
You're right.
That did that to you.
I don't know. I can't prove it.
Listen, you can register for this event at nobudgetfilmschool.eventbrite. That's event and bright, like rainbow bright, B-R-I-T-E.
Light bright, making things with light.
nobudgetfilmschool.eventbrite.com.
We will post that link on our Facebook page.
In a place. Or go visit their website, nobudgetfilmschool.com. It gets better. You can save 20% on this course.
Whoa.
When you use the special promotional code. Guess what the promotional code is?
I can't begin to imagine. What?
Linoleum.
Oh my God, we have a promotional code!
We're a promotional code.
We're somebody now!
That's spelled L-I-N-O-L-E-U-M.
Yes.
For all you dummies out there. if you have a valid student ID, you could save even more than 20%.
Well, all right.
Okay, so there are our new sponsor. And they're a real thing. I'm happy. I hope they like this ad that we just did for them. If they don't, we'll hear about it.
No doubt.
I'm sure I'm going to get an email. Don't tell people to steal cameras.
Thank you, No Budget Film School, for your support of the program.
So, yeah, do you live in Los Angeles? Are you in the Southern California area? Do you have a way to get here?
Sure you do.
Have you stolen not only a camera, but a car?
or an Amtrak ticket.
Or an Amtrak ticket. That's how you get here for the No Budget Film School Art and Science of No Budget Filmmaking class on May 3rd and 4th in Los Angeles. When you get to Los Angeles, do not come looking for us. We don't want you near us.
Go take the course instead.
Go take the course. Do not bother us.
Yes. Alonso?
Yes, sir. Why do you hate God?
To hate God would be to acknowledge that God exists.
Ah. But really, why do you hate God?
Well, clearly like Kevin Sorbo in the movie God's Not Dead, I once asked for something and didn't get it, and so now I'm full of petty bitterness.
Correct. That is why you hate God. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it.
Mm.
So I went to see God's Not Dead yesterday.
Kindly explain this one.
I have a fascination with Christian filmmaking and faith-based filmmaking.
Right.
Because...
Especially when they show it in the theater that's right next to Mademoiselle Magnifique.
Yeah. We'll get to that in a minute. As you know, obviously.
And we've discussed on the show extensively at this point.
I come from an extremely conservative evangelical Christian background.
Right.
That is my young life.
It is your cross to bear.
No pun intended. That is my young life.
Oh, I got it.
And some would say I left the church in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
I like to say that they forced me out. And I think because it's my story, that's how it went.
There you go. Sticking to it.
So anyway... But in that time, I have remained, what's the right word? Consumed by the subject. And so I've always been interested in the way that subculture, and when I say subculture, I mean... the conservative evangelical Christian subculture.
Right.
Not the way I'm talking about, like the way that Christianity and its ideas and its dominance sort of seep through all of the culture. That's not Western what I'm talking culture, about sure, through yeah. Western culture and American culture and politics.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the subculture of conservative evangelical Christianity as it relates to things like film and music and literature.
Pop culture dog whistles.
How that world communicates its ideas to itself.
Right. And whether or not they seem to have any interest in going beyond themselves.
Yes. And often, well, always, I should say, the claim is that they always want to reach outside themselves. But that isn't the way it ends up working. It always becomes a situation where the believers are, you know, petted.
Right.
And anyone outside of that who gets drawn in because of it is usually 11 or an adult whose life has just come to stop functioning.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been my experience in what I've observed. You know, when I was a kid growing up in that, it wasn't like, you know, people came to it who everything was going well for.
Right. Well, it's like when they trot out the ex-gays, and they're always like, oh, I was a drug abuser, and I was a hustler on the street, right. Blah, blah, blah. And my thought is always, well, you were gay wrong.
You were doing it wrong.
Don't blame gay for this.
So anyway, you know, I was very involved in, like, the world of contemporary Christian music in the early 80s when I was, you know, I was half punk rock, but not
right.
really going to let myself, you know, do all that. And one thing I came to realize about the world of Christian music and now Christian film, which is becoming bigger and bigger,
mm-hmm.
is that it's often message first.
Right.
Artistic qualities second, if at all.
Yeah. A distant second.
Yeah. And but it slides through on the strength of that message.
Sure.
Because the message is the most important thing.
You know, so it's funny. This movie is having did a huge box office yes. this weekend. Like, I think it's going to be in the top five or something. And I was thinking about the conversation we had recently about how, you know, when I felt like I could start walking out of gay movies, you know,
when
there were enough of them. Like, I think the big selling point to Christian audiences of late has been, oh, you're so underserved and evil Hollywood never pays attention yes. to you, blah, blah, blah.
And that's true.
And it's true. I get that. At what point do they get enough sops thrown at them that they start going, you know, we don't have to go to all of these. Some of these aren't very good.
You're not at that point yet.
No, obviously not. But do we reach
there's
that?
There's a straight to DVD market that's uh-huh. that's booming, thriving, sure. yeah. But the excitement of having a Christian film in theaters,
uh-huh.
and a lot of theaters, like, this opened on almost 800 screens nationwide.
Right.
Now, that's not 3,000 like Divergent, but it's...
It's still pretty big.
It's still pretty big. So, briefly, let's talk about the story first. It is... It's based on an urban legend, essentially.
It's a chick tract, you were saying. I mean, I remember
well,
that
no,
one.
The chick tract is itself based on sort of an urban legend. Go all the way back to David and Goliath. You know, you've got the story of an underdog who is on the side of God.
Mm-hmm. Who triumphs.
Who triumphs against an overwhelming force that is on the side of evil.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right, Moses and the king of Egypt.
Fast forward to the Christians being fed to the lions
right.
in Rome. Underdogs. You know, the early Christian church, they suffered. You know, they suffered. They were not, they didn't run the show.
Yet. But boy, when they did.
But then they started running the show.
Yeah.
And they ran the show. They've run the show since mostly since then.
And then you get the Inquisition and the Salem witch trials.
Yeah.
And
the Christian church has
run
much,
the show.
Yeah, for and have run the show in American culture.
Yeah,
with a couple of exceptions. Here are the contemporary pockets of American culture where evangelical Christians do not dominate. The media, which is, you know, run by creative people.
Right.
Who maybe grew up in conservative evangelical Christian environments or conservative Catholic Christian environments. And then they had to run away so that they weren't so they didn't get the life crushed out of them.
Right.
And they all came to Los Angeles or New York City and they built things and they made things. And yeah, the media is not a welcoming place for the Christian message.
Right.
It just isn't. Also, they do not thrive in academia, by and large. Because what you have there is, you know, a lot of people who, no matter what religious background they grew up with, again, I'll tell you, the minute you start reading too many books, and I'll tell you this is the truth, because this has happened to me. The minute you start reading too many books, boy, you are not part of the group. Like, especially if you're reading the books they don't want you to read, they will tell you straight up, stop reading that book. That happened to me.
Yeah.
Don't read that. It's against God. Well, how can that be? It's not against God.
It's like in Footloose.
Knowing things does not make you against God. And so, academia, I wouldn't say it's hostile to Christianity, but it is indifferent to Christianity, and it is not going to, you know, lay down its facts for beliefs.
Unless you go to the parallel universe academia created at places like Oral Roberts University,
yes.
Or,
yes.
You know, the Jerry Falwell
Liberty University. Faith first, facts second.
Second, yeah.
And so, so here's what you've got now in this film. You've got a big movie. You've got a big thing existing in the culture. It is a moment where Christianity can be a part of the mainstream culture. For its audience to cheer. And its story is about a brave young man who topples an atheist professor in the world of academia. Yeesh. Which is based on an urban legend. You can go to Snopes. I'm not kidding this. You can go to Snopes. Go to Snopes and type in dropped chalk. Because that's where this comes from. And this story goes all the way back to the early part of the 20th century about a young man who stands up in a university setting and proves the existence of God or proves that evolution didn't happen or proves that atheism is faulty, and the professor is humiliated. And so that is what this film is about. Kevin Sorbo plays a philosophy professor.
Oh, wait, whoa, 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 whoa.
Listen, just accept it. He's an actor.
We can't just run past Kevin Sorbo plays a philosophy professor.
Who makes his students' grades, here we go, who makes his students' grades contingent on them writing the words, God is dead, on a piece of paper, signing their name to it, and handing it in.
Because that happens.
He says, you will fail if you don't do this.
Oh, come on.
Obviously, this is a situation that could be corrected by a visit to the dean's office. Honestly, it is a situation that could be corrected by the visit to the dean's office. Or, if in fact it really ever existed, and the film, again, doesn't claim to be based on this. It claims to be based on a variety of lawsuits brought against university systems by students of faith. And they even give, like, specifics in the credits. It's a long credits crawl of lawsuits based on this lawsuit and this lawsuit and this lawsuit and this lawsuit, which sort of asks, really, the question is, Christians involved in lawsuits?
Yeah, how much of an underdog are you if you're that lawyered up?
Yeah. How ethical is it for a Christian to be involved in any kind of lawsuit like that, you know? Is that what would Jesus do? Would Jesus go around suing people?
Yeah. Is that rendering unto Caesar that which belongs to Caesar? Because their
beliefs are being sort of, you know, pushed back on. Now, I need to go to this website because I wrote it down.
Which one?
The website they listed at the end of the film.
Oh.
Which is in my notebook, which is not nearby my hands. AllianceDefendingFreedom.com, I think, is the name of it. Anyway.
Alliance trying to keep us bossing the show all the time, always.
Basically, and you can say anything.com. So, obviously, you know where this story is going. The professor says, if you can, over the course of the next three courses, the next three classes, class sessions, if you can present your case for the existence of God to these students, and if they all agree that you're right, then you don't fail. Now, there are tons of peripheral characters. There is a left-wing blogger who runs around conducting, and she uses these words herself, ambush interviews, which, I got news, this is not how journalists talk. They do not say, I'm going off on an ambush interview.
That's Sarah Palin talk.
Weirdly enough, the ambush interviewer left-wing blogger has a bumper sticker on her car that says, I heart evolution. And she, on a weekday, a school day, she somehow manages to intercept Willie Robertson from Duck Dynasty and his wife, they're in the film, on their way to church. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what day of the week do the Duck Dynasty people go to church? Like, is this, does it happen on Tuesday at their particular church?
Well, aren't there,
isn't that, it doesn't make sense.
Aren't there Wednesday church things for
people? Oh, we have Wednesday at night.
Yeah.
Wednesday night.
Okay.
But this is like
during the day.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. She calls her boyfriend, Dean Cain, high-powered, decadent finance guy, on the phone. She says, I'm on my way to an ambush interview with Willie Robertson. And I'm thinking, okay, sure, you're going to go ambush him, but you're going to catch him outside the door of the church, and he's, what's he doing? Like, he talks about how he's going in there to have church, and it doesn't make any sense. So logic isn't always on the side of this film in terms of, like, where the narrative is going.
They have to keep the straw man standing.
I will say this, though. It's got decent production values. The camera's in the right place. It's not See Me Dance. It's not like that kind of like lunatic, you know, situation where like crazy stuff is taking place.
Right.
This is all sort of run-of-the-mill stuff. There's a Muslim character, and she is a young university student who has been hiding her Christian faith from her family for a year.
Hey.
And every time she's around her father, she has to put her head wrap on. The minute she gets out of the house and away from him, she takes it off. She's listening to Franklin Graham sermons on her iPod. That dude, boy howdy. Go look up Franklin Graham. He's a case. And of course, when a Muslim father catches her finally being a Christian, he beats her. Like, they should have really taken it all the way and just had him honor kill her if they really wanted to, you know, demonize the Muslims, which they do, but they do it effectively. There's a cameo by the Newsboys, the Christian pop band who are extremely successful. They finish the film, in fact, with a big song, and they convert the blogger girl.
Really?
In right before their concert, she runs backstage to ambush interview them, and she's furious at God because he gave her cancer.
Of course.
And so she finds out she's got cancer in the middle of the movie. Dean Cain finds out she's got cancer, and he's like, I'm not into this, and he leaves her. Oh. It's pretty great. And so she goes to ambush the Newsboys. How she gets backstage at this Staples Center concert is beyond me.
She's a blogger.
Yeah. But she becomes a Christian right before the show. Another point of logic lost on this film, at one point in the movie, the guy, the kid who's this university student who's in Kevin Sorbo's class, he goes to his minister. The minister is played by David A.R. White. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, what do I do? Do I just sign the paper? My girlfriend, she just broke up with me because I wouldn't sign the paper. Because the girlfriend's like, could we just not raise a scene? Could we just not make a scene anywhere? Could we just, like, be cool, sign the paper, who cares, get the grade, go to law school? You know, this is not the end of your faith if you sign this dumb paper. He says no, she breaks up with him. He goes to his minister, David A.R. White, and he says, what do I do? And the minister says, is there any other, how many people are in your class? And the guy goes, oh, like 80. He goes, are any of them Christians? And the guy goes, no. Like, how do you know? Just because maybe they're all like your girlfriend. Maybe they're all like, look, dude, can we just not have a ruckus? Can we just, I'll just sign the paper.
Can we have class outside today?
Exactly. So, but he says, no. And the minister goes, well, then you're going to be the only person who tells them about Jesus. And I'm sitting in theater thinking, man, the Newsboys are coming next week. He's got the tickets already. Like, now he doesn't have a girlfriend. He's got an extra ticket. Do you want to go with him? He's not the only way that people are going to hear about Jesus. The Newsboys are coming to town. At the end of the movie, Staples Center is packed. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wait a second. So he's the lone Christian in this film, but the Newsboys sold out Staples Center in this town. Where'd they all come from?
Because this band that I only just now heard of apparently has huge crossover appeal.
Oh, they're big.
Yeah, I'm sure they are.
Big. They're a big deal. They've been around since like the late 80s, early 90s.
I'm sure they're a big deal, but they're
so big, they don't even have all the original members anymore.
Oh, like, one of those.
They no longer have any original members of the band.
But are they a big deal outside of the world of Christians?
I think their albums like chart on the Billboard Top 200 and stuff like that.
Right.
In a Switchfoot Creed kind of way.
Okay.
Pretty sure about that.
Okay.
I mean, I'd have to go look that up, the numbers. But no, they're a big deal.
I see.
They're Jars of Clay kind of level.
Okay. Yeah.
So even the whole, like, I'm the only one who can defend God, that even that doesn't even hold up under the weight of this film's own story.
Right.
Like, its own script doesn't even prop it up properly.
Right.
But yeah, the story on Snopes goes that a guy stands up to a professor and humiliates him, mm-hmm. essentially. And that is, in fact, what happens to Kevin Sorbo. Kevin Sorbo is humiliated. And it comes to turn out that in the middle of class, in front of everybody, Kevin Sorbo confesses that when he was young and his mother was dying, he prayed to God to save her life, and God didn't do it. So he hates God.
Meh.
He hates God. It's not that he has come to any sort of philosophical or intellectual, you know, understanding of the existence or non-existence of God. It's all very, very personal.
Yeah.
Now, this feeds into a few...
And same with the blogger, right?
This feeds into a few cultural narratives that do exist in the world of evangelical Christianity, and I know this for a fact because I was there.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of the angry, hurt atheist.
Uh-huh.
Analogous to the angry, hurt homosexual, by the way.
Of course.
We're all angry and hurt.
Yes.
And that is why we've rejected God.
Mm-hmm.
All of us, obviously, have rejected God because we are angry and hurt.
So there's never an acknowledgement that somebody just might not believe in God at all.
No. It's always you are angry.
You know that God exists, but he done you wrong, so meh.
Yes.
Oh, please.
So that is a very common idea that circulates among the evangelical culture. The other very common fantasy that exists is the one of the humiliated
academic
aggressor. The aggressive, smug person from the outside,
the intellectual,
who gets taken down a peg and humiliated. Mm-hmm. This is actually an anti-Christian narrative. Because if you are, according to Willie Robertson in this movie, he spoke very clearly about the red letters in the Bible that are attributed to Christ.
Right.
All of Jesus' words in the Bible. In the King James Bible, you'll find a red letter.
Yeah.
Those letters are in red. Those sentences are in red. If you read those words, then none of them have anything to do with humiliating your enemies.
Yes. There's a lot of cheek turning.
They do it for the purpose of saving their soul. Like, you have to get a little humiliated to get your soul saved, according to this film, and according to this ongoing persecution fantasy
right.
that exists and is growing. Mm. So it's a very, very, very problematic film. Unfortunately, it's doing huge numbers, and it's just going to take hold.
Yes.
But yeah, if you've ever heard anybody tell you the story or email you the story of the professor who crumbled under the weight of belief of a student in class, that story never happened. Except now there's a fictional narrative film where it does happen.
Apocryphal, as Sherman would say.
Apocryphal, as Sherman said, and Sherman and Mr. Peabody. So yeah, it's a bad movie. It's fascinating. It's definitely a film of its moment because the growing ideas of Christian persecution are everywhere now. Now that the political tide is sort of, you know, allowing for the world to exist outside of Christian dominion. Mm-hmm. And maybe the Christians are right. Maybe the political world is going to become like academia and like the media, and not always be friendly to them running the show. Nobody's going to get thrown in jail for being a Christian. No one's going to get thrown to a lion for being a Christian. They're just not going to get to dominate everyone.
Yeah, you don't get to keep us from being married, right? Just because you're a Christian.
So it's an interesting film. If you have any interest in this subject at all, the idea of religious freedom being curtailed in the name of, you know, progressive social legislation or
science
or entertainment or anything like that, then yeah, watch this movie because it's better made than the average Tyler Perry film, and it's got a serious axe to grind. One that, you know, you would be unwise to ignore.
Were there petitions when you were there that Cosmos should include creationism?
No. But there was a guy sitting right behind me.
Oh, yes.
And I hesitate to share this story because it will wind up sounding fake. Given all the recent internet hoaxes of, I'm a waiter in a restaurant. The people wrote on my note, I'm not leaving you a tip because you're a homosexual. And it all turns out to be a lie. Mm. Something actually happened at the screening I was at. They showed an ad before the movie for Elton John's Million Dollar Piano Show in Las Vegas.
Go on.
And the guy sitting behind me when the ad was over, he says, wrong audience for that ad.
Yeah.
And I'm like, in my notebook, because I took notes on the film, sure. Obviously. In my notebook, I just wrote, EJ, $1 million piano. Ha, ha, ha. Now, it's not like he stood up and said it, and it's not like anyone laughed or applauded or anything. He said it in a normal tone of voice, and I may have been the only person who heard it being said.
Right.
But I was like, oh, come on, dude.
Yeah, because
you like Benny and the Jets. You like Benny and the Jets.
No Christians bought whatever album had sad songs on it, you know.
Or the Lion King soundtrack?
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Lion King soundtrack.
All right, before we get into the other adventures in Burbank and the other movies this week, Linoleum Knife is also brought to you by The Real Truth.
The Real Truth.
Everything you didn't know you needed to know to make an independent film.
That's right.
By Reed Martin.
That's correct. And he's going to just keep on sponsoring.
Yes.
This.
About maybe, making.
Unless we ruin, unless we, unless he starts hating us for ruining all of his ad copy.
He's been very supportive.
Hey, guess what?
What?
Thank you. You know, you don't have to be a filmmaker, a first-time director, or an aspiring screenwriter to appreciate The Real Truth.
Really?
You could just be a dope like me. That's because the book is literally a written history of independent film, as told by some of the greats in the business, mm-hmm. who recount their early days of struggle and sacrifice. Werner Herzog.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what he used to do before he was a filmmaker?
I think I know this, but tell me.
No, you guess.
He worked in a call center. No, I don't
know. No, he did not work in a call center.
I haven't heard his voice in a while. My imitation is not as good as it used to be.
He worked as a bouncer in a sex club.
Well, all right.
Now, the original ad copy that Reed sent us said he worked as a bouncer in a strip club, and he got it right, and he corrected it.
Uh-huh.
He sent a correction email. Yes. And I was like, whoa, Werner Herzog, a bouncer in a strip club. You got to be, wait a second. How could Werner Herzog have been a bouncer in a strip club? You got to be a goon to be a bouncer in a strip club. Because those guys in strip clubs, I mean, okay, I've never been in a strip club, but come on.
They got to throw people out.
Bunch of dudes getting all drunk and
horned up,
wanting to touch a lady's boobs and stuff. Things and getting lap dances, you know there's some aggression going
on. So how is being a bouncer in a sex club more palatable somehow?
People, okay, first of all, you're naked in a sex club.
Well, now,
you're doing sex. And so
is it that
you're not
going
you're not going to cause a ruckus.
Or is it?
Because how are you going to fight somebody naked in a sex club and get yourself bounced?
Somebody naked could really put a fight.
And plus, your mind's not on violence when you're in a sex club. You're there to make some sex.
Well, we're talking about Germany in the 60s. A sex club could mean that there were sex shows on stage.
Hmm. Good point.
Werner Herzog experts? Anybody know? Anyway, we're straying from the point here.
Anyway, he stood around that sex club and he thought, you know what? I'm going to make a gear the wrath of God. I'll show everyone in this sex club.
Soon as they will know the name.
I will be great and they will all know the name Werner Herzog. Alexander Payne, guess what he did?
I don't know.
Okay, well, he didn't have a job like that.
Okay.
Just after he went to film school.
Oh, right.
But then, look, though, there was still struggle.
Yes.
Because he could not get anyone to make his films.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. Then, guess what Kimberly Pierce did?
I can only imagine.
Well, she worked as a paralegal.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. And then... But she had her phone and her electricity cut off a lot while she was trying to raise the money to make her first short.
Hmm.
And then when she got some, her line producer spent all the money on dumb things like car rentals and incidentals and stuff. So she's got a story.
Yes.
In this book about things that weren't great.
Don't make Kimberly Pierce's mistakes. Let her explain them to you so that you don't make
Guess what Christopher Nolan did.
I don't know.
He was a freelance script reader.
Huh.
Guess what? How much money he made doing that?
$15 a script.
$40 a day.
Ugh.
Yeah. Do you know how much extras make to do nothing except stand around? They
how
make
much?
Like $75 a day.
Mm.
He could have done that. But no. He did a job that was, you know... Learned him some things. Guess what Darren Aronofsky used to do?
I don't know. Just tell
me. He was lonely.
Oh, well.
And he used to eat alone in restaurants. You know why? Because you can't afford to go to restaurants with other people if you're poor and you haven't made pie yet.
Yes. But you can have pie in the restaurant.
Listen, these and many other stories of filmmaker struggle.
Yes.
They are in the real truth.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're like me, and you are never going to make a film because you have not yet found a camera to steal.
You can still get something out.
You can still read this book and learn things about
the cinema.
The unhappiness of others.
Yes.
And I love the unhappiness of others. So, you can read about how Ken Burns was so broke.
How broke was he?
Before creating some of the most watched documentaries of the modern era, mm-hmm. like jazz and baseball and World War II, my mm-hmm. personal favorite.
And World the Civil War. War.
He was so poor that ice used to form in the glass on his bedside table.
Wow.
I don't think that's true.
It might be.
That may be apocryphal, too. But if it can't be apocryphal if Ken Burns told it to
yes.
me, right? If Ken Burns said to Reed Martin, guess what? Ice formed in the glass on my table. And Reed Martin's like, Okay.
When Ken Burns tells a story, does like does the music well up? Is it read by a narrator?
There's also the story of how in The Name of the Father, director Jim Sheridan had a job mopping floors and cleaning toilets in New York's Hell's Kitchen. Yeah. So struggle binds all aspiring filmmakers and struggling screenwriters together, and there is a lot of it to be read about in The Real Truth, R-E-E-L, from Faber & Faber, a division of Farrar, Straus, and Giroux. $25 retail. Or less money at Amazon.com.
Also available as a Kindle.
At Barnes & Noble, it's available on Kindle.
We'll post a link
Martin, on our whose credentials page. We have extensively discussed in and earlier extolled, episodes. Yes. You get this book.
Yes.
Before you read any other book.
He knows what he's talking about.
You get it.
All so, right, what's now, the next movie? Well, are we not going to talk about what's happening at Mademoiselle Magnifique?
Okay, people want to know. Yesterday when I saw God's Not Dead, it's playing almost exclusively in Los Angeles at the Burbank Media Center 8 Mall Theater. Mm-hmm. So on the third level, across from the Cinnabon, and across from the Mom and Pop Tamale restaurant, which is real good.
Is there still a carousel in that mall?
No, they took it out. Because that mall's dying.
That mall is dying.
That mall's dying. And so they took out the carousel, and now they've got like bungee jumping for toddlers or something. I don't know. It's something weird like that. I saw a lot of kids being thrown up into the air on cords.
Okay.
They seemed happy about it. All right. So who am I to say?
The parents didn't mind.
Yeah, who am I to say that these children are doing something bad with their lives? But back in my day, we had merry-go-rounds. And this mall used to have one, too. Yeah. Magnifique Mademoiselle, or Mademoiselle Magnifique, I can't remember, is the store that when you walk in the mall, it's right there. They've still got their Order Your Golden Globe and Academy Award gown sign in the window. I wanted to walk in and be like, y'all know those are over, right? They got done with, right?
Why take it down? It's going to be November again before you know it.
True. It's pre-award season already.
Yes, it's already begun. Don't let anyone fool you otherwise.
So The Muppets is real good, isn't it?
I loved it. Muppets Most Wanted. It's the second of the contemporary canon of Muppet movies, but as Bunsen Honeydew points out, it is the seventh sequel.
It's the seventh Muppet film.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Muppet movie.
Yes.
Caper.
Yes.
Manhattan.
Yes.
Treasure
Island.
Treasure Island, Christmas Carol, In Space, Muppets. So this is the seventh sequel. This is the eighth movie.
Yes.
Okay.
It's the eighth movie, the seventh sequel.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And it's
a caper.
And it's a caper, and there's a Kermit doppelganger named Constantine, and he and Ricky Gervais, they kidnap Kermit, they send him off to a Siberian prison run by Tina Fey.
Young children will learn the word gulag.
Yes. And Ty Burrell plays the French Interpol agent who, along with FBI agent Sam the
CIA
Eagle.
CIA agent.
Whatever. Sam the Eagle. They chase after Constantine.
Constantine and Ricky Gervais are using the Muppets European tour
to commit heists.
A series of crimes.
Yes. And there's a lot of celebrity cameos and a lot of silly jokes and a lot of goofy songs and Celine Dion is the greatest person alive in this film.
It's the one chance you'll ever get to see Ray Liotta and Danny Trejo do the opening number from a chorus line.
Yes. And I laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed because I'm in the tank for the Muppets. And I understand apparently that this film is only getting so-so reviews.
Yeah.
And is soft opening weekend box office. Mm-hmm. And that makes me very unhappy because I want more and more and more Muppet movies.
Yeah, I found it funny and charming and delightful from the get-go. There's also a very funny Muppets Monsters University short attached,
yep,
which is more fun than the feature film was.
Yes.
I this movie gave me everything I would want in a Muppets movie. The songs were fun, and I laughed constantly, and I had a great time. I mean, I don't even know how to parse it, you know.
Yeah, me neither. It's kind of hard to just sit here and talk about it because all the Muppet movies are exactly the same.
The good ones, anyway.
They're all exactly the same. They're all about somebody, intervening into the Muppets' world and causing a problem for them, or one of them having to leave, and it throws them into chaos.
They have to put the show on.
They got to put the show on. You know, so it's, you know, this is no different. They are not going for something new. They are not reinventing the wheel. They are being the Muppets the way you want them. And they are funny. And they are lovable. And so there. The end. Good movie. You should see it because I need a ninth film.
More Muppets.
Yeah. I got ragged on already by some people who, in my review, I said, maybe I don't need to see a Muppet Christmas Carol again.
Yeah, them's fighting words.
And people were like, how dare you, sir?
We have a letter about that this week, too, actually. Muppets Christmas Carol, there's stuff about it that I think is really great, and then there's other... I don't think the songs are particularly strong, which is disappointing because it's Paul Williams.
That's really my only beef with The Muppet Christmas Carol. It's a funny movie.
Yeah.
But do the songs the way your friend Kurt
My friend Kurt Holman, after we saw Muppet Christmas Carol, said, the problem with that movie is that every single song sounds like, la, 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 Christmas. But, look, if you were 7 or 9 when you first saw the Muppet Christmas Carol and you still treasure it to your heart today, then keep doing so by all means. I get it. I know how that kind of thing rolls. But, as a Christmas movie expert.
Author of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
I can attest that, yes, it is in many ways a very accurate retelling of the original Dickens, but there are better versions. Anyway.
Available wherever the real truth is sold.
The real truth is probably available in more places than Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Anyway. That's also true.
Okay, so you're clearly in a hurry to go here.
I'm going to talk about Stray Dogs next week.
Okay.
But we did not talk about Bad Words.
No, we did not. We forgot.
It stinks.
And that's been getting all over. Like, I've read other critics who hated it, but then there are some who are digging it.
Yes. More people have, critically speaking, more people have liked it than disliked it.
Put your mic down.
But boy, howdy, I dislike it.
Put your mic down because it makes... No. On the table, because it makes noises when you touch it and you move it and you rub it and you shake it and you...
when I rub it?
When you rub it. Everyone can hear and God cries.
You don't know because you hate God.
Because I'm bitter. Me.
Yeah. So the... Bad Words... Jason Bateman's directorial debut.
Right.
He plays a jerk who enters a kid's spelling bee thanks to a loophole technicality in the rules because he's got an axe to grind. He's on a mission. You do not find out what that big secret is until the end of the film, why he's doing it. But boy, howdy, the world just lays down and accommodates itself for him. All the way through to the end, and he does nothing but rip people to shreds everywhere he goes, every step of the way. If you are in his way, whether you are kind or unkind to him, he has vicious, R-rated, horrible things to say to you. They will be racist, they will be misogynist, they will be homophobic, they will simply be nasty. This is the source of the comedy in the film. But you don't know why, other than for the people with whom he has actual beef, he must be so cruel relentlessly to everyone around him. Even people who have no connection to the spelling bee that he's in. Just waitresses in coffee shops.
Like, oh, okay. See, that's where you lose me.
He is he's just gross the whole way through. And by about 20 minutes in, you're thinking, am I supposed to be rooting for you? Because I actually don't care, short of you were hideously, like, destroyed somehow in the earlier part of your life by someone connected to this spelling bee, I don't see any good reason for you to be this kind of guy. Furthermore, again, much like with the logic of God's not dead, this story doesn't make a lot of sense. Much like with the logic of Divergent, this story doesn't make a lot of sense. How does a person like this get to the age of 40 employed?
Mm-hmm.
Or just walking through the world.
And not beaten to a pulp.
Not arrested. Not having your face punched in every day of your life. How? How did you get here and skate through what the world really does to vicious, nasty, nonstop people like that? Because if you're really that kind of a guy, you're going to get yourself arrested at some point. You're going to get yourself punched at some point. You're going to get fired. You're going to be that guy that's like tells off the boss every chance you get, right, or insults a customer or insults a client, and you're going to be fired. But the film never tells you how he has become this person or how he has lived and become a functioning adult up to this point. He just arrives pre-gross and taking it out on everyone. Furthermore, there's a journalist character played by Catherine Hahn who is as unbelievable as the journalist character in God's Not Dead.
Also a blogger, right?
Because she bankrolls all of his spelling bee trips. She follows him around on planes from B to B. How much money do journalists who are not you and me make? What newspaper is going to pay for this story when he steadfastly refuses to answer any of her questions from town to town? He's like, you get one question answered per town, although he hasn't answered any. And he refuses to answer any during the course of the film. She has to go behind his back and sleuth out the answers to the questions of who is this guy and why does he exist? Why is he trying to muck up this spelling bee for these children?
Mm.
Why is he trying to destroy the spelling bee system in the United States? Like, when did that become, you know,
sacrosanct?
Yeah. When did that become a thing that's bothering people that needs to be taken down? We got to take those spelling bees down a peg. So it's a mess.
Mm.
It's occasionally funny thanks to the kid in the film played by I'm blanking on his name, but he's been in a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
This little Indian American kid.
Yeah, I just read about him in EW. I forget his name.
But he's funny and sweet, and he
leavens.
He keeps Jason Bateman's character from being full on, you know, caustic all the time. It's just, it's dispiriting.
Wow.
This film.
Bummer.
And then you find out the big secret at the end, and you're like, that's your big secret? You and millions of other people, this thing that has happened to Jason Bateman that's turned him so sour and so gross, it's happened to me, okay? And look at me. I'm nice as pie. Polite, well-mannered.
Telling people to steal cameras.
Sometimes advocating for the theft of cameras in a Robin Hood kind of way. Occasionally trying to poison my spouse.
Yes. Just
on accident.
On accident, yes.
But in general, nice as pie. Sweet as Tupelo honey.
I saw Cheap Thrills.
You did, and I hear it's good, and you say it's almost good.
It's okay. I think it's one of those movies that would have been a great short film. It reminds me a lot, and it's, I think, meant to remind me a lot of that Roald Dahl story that they did on Twilight Zone, and they did it again on Roald Dahl's Tales of the Unexpected, where the guy makes the bet. It's like, you know, if your lighter can light 10 times in a row, you win my car. But if it doesn't, you have to cut your pinky off.
Yeah.
And in fact, that original TV episode was inspired the Quentin Tarantino segment of Four Rooms, if you remember that movie.
Yes.
Anyway, so this is about the lead guy, whose name I don't remember, gets laid off from his job, and he's like, you know, he's about to get evicted from his apartment. He's got a baby at home with a wife, and he's at a bar, and an old high school friend of his, played by Ethan Embry, shows up, and Ethan Embry, you know, has apparently been kind of, you know, seedy and on the wrong side of the law.
Yeah.
They wind up...
stealing cameras.
Yeah, no. They wind up having drinks with David Koechner and his, like, hot young blonde wife. Because it's the wife's birthday, and hey, join us for, you know, a round, blah, blah, blah. And Koechner starts making these very sort of innocuous kind of bets, you know. Like, I bet you, you know, $25 you can't get that girl at the bar to slap you in the face, you know, and that kind of thing. And so they wind up, like, doing coke and partying together and going back to Koechner's house, and the bets just escalate, and they start getting more ridiculous, and
yes,
the guys start really undermining each other to win the bets. So even though they had been ostensibly friends, they become, like, these sort of vicious combatants as the stakes get higher and the money gets higher. So it's a cool concept, and it's mostly entertaining, but it there's only so many places that it can go, so you can kind of guess where it's all winding up.
Right.
And it just feels very much like the kind of like an anthology TV episode, but just stretched out to feature length, you know.
I'll be the judge of this.
Yeah, fine, judge away. There's scenes about it I liked, but overall, I think it's, you know, I was talking to Bibbs about this, and he thinks that critics who like the film are kind of overstating it because they really want people to see it, and because it's kind of a little movie with, you know, a small distributor. And blah,
it's playing
blah, blah.
At Cinefamily.
It's
this
playing
week.
At Cinefamily here, yeah. So people might be kind of overselling it, he thinks, and I would tend to agree because it's fine, it's good. Like, it's kind of thing if you saw it at a film festival, you'd be like, oh wow, that was really, you know, But it's not a game changer.
I'm going to try to see it this week.
It's fine,
and I'll make sure everyone understands how. If it's really good or bad, when I talk about it next.
That'll be great, because no one cares. Okay.
Yeah, they do.
What's your DVD?
Is that There's no Alonzo in Linoleum Knife.
Nor is there a Dave.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If it were Linoleum Knives.
I should have thought that through.
D, period.
Maybe. Howdy, Linoleum Knife. Oh, wait.
Wait, DVDs. Was that all the movies?
The Punk Singer comes out this week.
Oh,
on
okay.
DVD. Right. The Kathleen Hanna documentary. She, the former lead singer of Bikini Kill and La Tigre, and now the Julie Ruin. And it's a wonderful documentary. It's about a woman who forged her own path through contemporary music and who yelled at me once. But she yelled at a lot of people. I didn't do anything wrong.
No.
I just happened to be standing in the wrong place at the Bikini Kill show. And she said, all you big guys, move to the back. Girls, come down to the front. Which is, there's a book called Girls to the Front, which is about Riot Girl. And she yelled at all the dudes. And I was like, oh man, I'm a big goony dude. I gotta go stand in the back. That's what I did.
So the girls can mosh.
So the girls could be down in the front and hear the special words of Kathleen Hanna. I was taught, like, the girls are generally, they tend to be shorter than guys.
Yes.
If a big dumb guy is standing in your way at a show, you can't see the band.
Right.
It's not cool.
No.
I've always been conscious of my big gooniness and how I should stand in the back of things, thanks to Kathleen Hanna.
Well, I'm glad she learned you something.
Yeah.
Also out this week, Mystery Science Theater 3000, Volume 29.
Hooray.
From the Shout Factory, which has a lot of really cool extras, including some interviews with Joel Hodgson, an interview with Mamie Van Doren, thank you very much,
nice.
Because her film Untamed Youth is included in this box, as is The Thing That Wouldn't Die, Hercules versus the Captive Women, and one of my personal favorites, The Puma Man.
Oh, yeah.
A.K.A. Pumaman.
Pumaman. Howdy, Linoleum Knife. I greatly enjoy it when it's the Dave and Alonzo show. Wait, did I already read this letter?
I don't know that you did.
I think I did.
I don't think... Keep going.
I greatly enjoy it when it's the Dave and Alonzo show, and I enjoy it when you have guests.
Okay.
Having an episode that was all about the guest was an interesting change. Hi, Fozzie Bear. I miss you. I don't... That's in the letter. I don't know. Okay. I felt like I learned a lot both times that you had Manola Dargis on, and I would definitely like to hear her again.
Yeah.
If I had known in time that Alonzo was doing a Google Hangout for the Oscars, I would have jumped on that. Thanks for all the great shows. Love, Paul.
Oh, that's Paul Tran.
Paul Tran, yeah, yeah.
Formerly of Secretly Timid.
I had not read that.
No,
before, you had not. Okay, yeah. David Alonzo, first off, big fan of the show, never miss an episode. I also have to say I really love the Clue commentary.
Oh, thank you. Currently available.
He's doing an ad for us right here, which everyone on Earth should pay $1.99 for, because it will be the best $1.99 they have ever spent on anything ever.
Wow, that's going on the poster.
Thanks, dude. One. Yeah, we do these extra episodes of the show. Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife. These episodes are film specific. We only talk about one film. We talk about that film while we watch that film with the sound off. So that it runs, that episode runs the running time of the film. You can listen to it in your car. You can listen to it on the treadmill. You can listen to it while you're watching the film also with the sound off as though it were a commentary.
Yes.
Although these are not official commentaries. No, they are just episodes of this podcast. And they cost money. They cost $1.99.
Yep. All you have to do is PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes.
We can send you our Clue commentary. We can send you our commentary for the Apple. We've got one new ones coming up soon.
Coming up soon, although probably not by the end of March because we kind of screwed up and we weren't thinking. But there'll be another one very soon.
Yes.
In the month of, say, April.
April.
He says, I also purchased the Apple commentary, which is why I am sending this message. A few episodes ago, Dave warned us that the dumbest listener to Linoleum Knife is out there.
Yes.
That's true. One of you is officially, statistically speaking, the dumbest listener we have.
One of you is also the smartest.
And I am sure, ever since, all of us have been looking deep within ourselves, hoping and assuring ourselves that we were not the one. Yet also gripped with fear that we may very well be that person. Well, I am here to ease the minds of your other listeners because I believe I have solid proof that I am, in fact, the dumbest. You put the Apple commentary up for sale, and I bought it right away and tweeted about it and watched the movie to prepare myself for it. Then I got sort of tied up, thinking, hey, it'll be there for later, and then I can savor and enjoy it. However, and this is where the dumb part comes into play, I failed to read the fine print in the email stating that the link went dead after 6 days or so. So when I went to download it and listen to Clue, I decided to grab the Apple as well, only to find, 30 days later, that it had expired.
I sent him a new one.
I am excited to listen to it because the movie is a trip, and well, I'm hoping you make fun of Moose Jaw like the movie, since I have relatives there and have been there several times, and yes, it is a place that needs to be mocked both by the Apple and the entertaining and engaging critics supplying this commentary for it. I would be very willing to pay an extra $1.99 dumb tax for a second. second download, but also wanted to let you know the next time you are talking to the dumbest listener, there is a 99% chance that you are talking directly to me. Of course, I will always hold on to the hope that someone dumber than myself will start listening soon, and he or she may already be out there. Be assured that, as with Clue, I will be downloading... Blah! I will be downloading all future commentaries, as I will be buying everyone you create. The day I get it so as not to sink further into stupidity. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Sean. Yes, I did not charge him the $1.99 stupidity tax. I just sent him another one. But yeah, when you buy it, you do open the file quickly.
David Alonzo.
Or download it.
If I stand in my kitchen and stare at my griddle and say, candy face, candy face, candy face, will Dave White appear behind me with pancakes? I'm not sure if this would be awesome or just annoying to Mr. White. Douglas. Douglas is one of our most sexually attractive listeners. I know Douglas, as do you. And I'll just say this on the record. You're one of our hottest listeners, Douglas. Thank you for listening and keeping our listenership attractive. When you want me in your kitchen with pancakes, I'll be in your kitchen with pancakes. All you got to say is candy face three times. Don't stop being hot, Douglas.
He travels a lot. He could wind up materializing in, like, you know, Buffalo with pancakes. Be careful with that.
No, it's got to be here.
Yeah. Okay. As long as we're laid down the ground.
I'll bring them pancakes. He's an attractive man.
Just don't poison him.
I shan't. Good. Look, if you poison someone who's super hot, why? That just eliminates one hot person from the world.
And from our listenership.
And from our listenership, most importantly. Okay, so one more, because here's a top 10 list.
Okay.
Dear David Alonso, on a recent episode's review of A Winter's Tale, Dave dropped some genuine wisdom. I do that every week. Regarding the qualities that make a profoundly bad movie such a joy to watch. And he's quoting me here. Mm-hmm. Let's just read my quote because it's so important.
Let's.
In her masterpiece, all the decisions made are right and inspired and visionary. In an anti-masterpiece, in a truly transcendent, sort of psychedelically bad film like The Apple, a monumentally bad film requires the same sort of perfect line of decisions, all of them wrong. Together, those congealed bad decisions become this thing that you cannot stop looking at. You must see it, and you must see it again, and you must see it again, because within that mass of bad decisions grows a mystery. The mystery of how it could have happened. How could this have been created? There is an element of mystery to every staggeringly bad movie. I am wise. I came up with all that off the top of my head, too, by the way. So, you're welcome, everyone. Thank God for me. Thank God for me. He continues, I'd been trying to put my finger on what separates mere misguided Hollywood product, of which there is so much, from true disaster pieces that are endlessly rewatchable. The kind that compel you to share them with friends so you can relive your initial shock and fascination through their eyes. I think Dave summed it up perfectly. The Apple is such a great example of this type of movie. Below is a top 10 list of others that I have enjoyed for you to knife as you please. Okay. So these are his top 10 disaster pieces.
Okay.
The Manitou.
In her neck.
In her neck. Food Fight.
Which we still need to watch.
Zardoz.
Ooh.
Glenn or Glenda.
Mm-hmm.
Troll 2.
Yeah.
The Roger Corman Fantastic Four.
Ooh. Which, in certain ways, is better than the Tim Story one, but, you know.
I don't know what this one is at all. An American Hippie in Israel. Do you know what this is?
I know the title. I've never seen it, but that's a title that once you hear it, you never forget
it. Yeah. The Room.
Mm-hmm.
Showgirls. We're going to get to this in a minute. Mm-hmm. And The Apple.
Okay.
All right, dude, you're 90% knife. Because Showgirls is not on that list.
All right.
Okay, you're 95% knife because you agree with him?
No,
Tell me what.
I'll say he's 90.
Say it.
He's 92.5% knife because I see both sides of the Showgirls argument. I refuse to commit either way. I see where he's coming from, and I see what you're about to say on that movie. So it's hard for me to pick a camp there. Why don't you explain why Showgirls is a misunderstood good movie?
It's too long to go into, but it is exactly the film Paul Verhoeven wanted to make, and it is exactly the film he should have made. It is a deranged art film.
But it's intentional.
But it is, every minute is meant to be the way it is.
All right.
And I think Elizabeth Berkley's performance is one of the unsung great performances of the 90s.
Yeah. No, I'll give you that.
I believe she went for it in a way that actors rarely do, and she was punished for it.
Yes. If you want to read more about defense of Showgirls, Google Showgirls and Jacques Rivette.
Yeah.
He has some interesting things to say.
How you like Jacques
about
Rivette now?
He has some interesting defenses to make.
Honorable mentions for Desperate Living and Barbarella, which are so perfectly wrong and right simultaneously that I don't know what to do with them.
Yeah, I put Desperate Living into the this is all intentional category.
Yeah. I would love to hear any recommendations you have for other films in the same vein. Well, See Me Dance, dude.
Miami Connection.
Yeah.
After Last Season, although that you think that one's also...
That might be an art prank.
Yeah, we're not sure.
Love the show. Thanks for the great reviews and guests.
The Lonely Lady, of course.
Every week, James. P.S. This part isn't really podcast relevant. Okay, that's not something that even needs to be... This is something that we can respond to off camera. Okay. It's nothing serious or weird or anything like that. It's just a... He's asking for advice on something.
So. Okay.
The end. We're done.
Okay. Well, as always, we thank you all for listening. We want to thank our sponsors, The Real Truth, Everything You Didn't Know You Needed to Know About Making an Independent Film by Reed Martin.
And No Budget
and
Film
the
School.
The No Budget Film School coming up May 3rd and 4th in Los Angeles.
3rd and 4th.
That's what I said.
Go to their site.
Which was, nobudgetfilmschool.eventbrite.com.
Or nobudgetfilmschool.com.
Or nobudgetfilmschool.com.
Get yourself a camera.
By any means necessary. Stop. We want to thank Blue for his wonderful theme music for the
show.
Thank
you, Blue, for all the good musics.
You can get his new album, To Hell With You, and information about everything that Blue is doing at his website, Bluetopia, BLEUTOPIA. As always, we send you to check out our friends out there in the world, ChristyLemire.com. If you are a Sirius XM listener, tune into Rotten Tomatoes Radio with Matt Atchedy and Gray Drake every Tuesday and Thursday. Check out the Frank DiCaro Show. Check out Derek and Romaine, whose show we periodically appear on. Too many words. And in the podcast universe, check out the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney. Check out Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion cast, Team Jack, the Schmoes Know, the B-Movie, as I said that, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, the Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and The Lunch. Bibbs incidentally talked me into live tweeting the first four episodes of Gem and the Holograms on Saturday.
That was an afternoon well spent by both of you.
I had never seen it, and they're making a movie of it, directed by the guy who made Step Up 3D. So
yes.
Anyway, you can go back into my Twitter
feed.
That's
why he's so excited.
Yes.
Now I understand.
Now it comes clear, yes.
It all makes sense.
So you can check out my Twitter feed at @aduraldi to read up on that. You can subscribe to the show at iTunes, and it is free, and you can leave us a nice review there. It would be awesome if you would. You can stream us at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com. Like our Facebook page. You can also stream the show there, and we'll have links to The Real Truth, to No Budget Film School, to there was something else you mentioned, I think. I don't know. Follow our Twitter, at @linoleumcast. You can check into the show at tvtag.com. And send us your questions, comments, top 10 lists, worst 10 lists, whatever, at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can also PayPal us $1.99 at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
This is the most important part of the show.
To get your Clue commentary
or the
Apple commentary.
All the
and
money.
You can visit our website at linoleum-knife.com,
yes,
where we link to our reviews and other places and occasionally even write something original.
Can we be done? This is 3 hours long.
Yes, it's 3 hours long, and there's ice in the water glass.
Ken Burns, there's ice in Ken Burns' water glass. It formed there. It's so cold in the D for Ken Burns.
We'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.